Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to me. Dr. Michelle, you're not just listening to me, you're walking with me. You're talking to me, even though I can't hear you. You are talking to me. I'm hoping that you're having a meaningful Lent in any way that that meaning comes to you. So we can be crying out in the wilderness. We can be inundated with people and kids and Easter events. We can be upcoming Easter events. We can be sports goers. We can be anything. But the whole point is that if you're listening to this right now, you somehow have a concept of Lent. And that concept has been given to you through the church, whatever church you have. You can accept it, you can reject it, you can try to make it better, you can limp along, you can use it as a way to lose weight, you can use it as a way to be a nicer person, which is, that's a good thing. Maybe it's a good thing to lose weight. I'm not downing that. Every time I say that, it sounds like I'm downing it in a way. I'm really not. So I want to talk a little bit today about freedom and what that means. And I'm going to, again, talk about the internal freedom versus the external freedom, the internal wilderness versus the external wilderness, and how that plays a part in our everyday lives, whether we're rushing out to grab a little fast food on the way to pick up our kid from school or after school activity or soccer, whatever it is, or whether you're going to your job or whether you've just don't know how to pick up the pieces of your life again, or whether you are, as my father is right now, 91 years old, and for whatever reason that he had this combination, perfect storm of going into the hospital because he had a little chest pain and finding out that it really wasn't anything that was life-threatening. So it wasn't his heart. It wasn't his. It wasn't a stroke. It wasn't a blood clot. It was something that had to do with a spasm in the esophagus, where it's the tube where you swallow something, it goes down to your stomach. That's what he went in for in 91. And then we know that sometimes people go in and then boom, 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 the dominoes start falling. And so as he's in there and he's complaining about pain because he's got these rods in his back from a surgery, big radical surgery he had several years ago, they gave him a narcotic. Well, that's not inappropriate, but he is elderly. So that's going to whack him over the head a lot stronger than it would somebody younger. Any medication, just use this as a rule of thumb. There are all kinds of things on any age group. We have this middle age group, kind of quasi-adult, a little bit, maybe on either end, a little young, a little older, where we have a certain, it's not even predictable because we all have different reactions to medications, but we pretty much know, yeah, you take this, let's say a Benadryl, and it's going to dry you up a certain way. And you're going to have, so you have allergies. A lot of people are having those allergies right now. And we know that it's going to just do a certain thing, and you kind of know what to expect. But if a child is too young and takes it, or an elderly person is too old and takes it, it's going to affect them very differently. So where you might just have the middle group of people under that bell curve take a Benadryl and be a little sleepy, no, they shouldn't drive, dries them up a little bit. You give it to an elderly person, the same dose, and they stop urinating, or they might get psychotic, or they may have what's called a strong anticholinergic effect. They may not, but they might. So this is where a lot of times you get that, you know, the PM sleeping over-the-counter stuff that has a lot of the diphenhydramine, which is actually Benadryl, in it. And over time, we don't know what it's doing to these elderly people. So let's go back to my dad and how we're going to talk about the wilderness and how things happen. So here he is in this hospital. And really, everything is kind of okay. And he just needs to turn around a little bit and make sure that it's nothing life-threatening. And it isn't. But he complains about pain. They give him a narcotic, which is an okay thing to do. It's not a bad thing. He's been on them before. But just to get him out of pain, because he's not going to be able to get up and get around. Well, what does that do? One of the side effects is urinary retention. As a lot of different things for elderly men, enlarged prostates and all kinds of stuff, or maybe some impact. I mean, all kinds. We don't need to go into that. I'm not going to talk about this whole program, I promise you. However, the point being that then if you start that one little thing, then they got to treat the urinary retention. Why is it happening? Well, we're not really sure why. Well, some things are, we have to wait for the medication to wear off. They didn't even come into that thought that that might even be the problem. But so they have to put in a catheter. Then they put in the catheter. And then when they put in the catheter, the place he lived won't let him back in. And he's cognitively completely fine. In other words, his brain is working great. He doesn't have one lick of dementia. He's getting more childlike in a lot of ways, but not completely. But he still has all his faculties. So he knows the score. He knows what's happening in some respects. And yet he's experiencing it himself. So he can't really get out of bed. He can't really undo the catheter. And he knows that the longer he's in there, the worse this is going to get for him. And he knows that the more that's piled onto him, the more he's not going to be able to go back home, because somebody else has the control. Somebody else is controlling what's going on in his life. And these little tweaks, these little comedy of errors that aren't really errors, you just happen to get that side effect, and then that affects something else, and you got to treat that, and you got to treat that, and you got to treat that, and pretty soon weeks go by, and that's kind of where he's at now. So this freedom we got to talk about is we don't expect these vulnerable points to come up in our lives. And the middle parts of our life, we tend to feel like, yeah, we've gone through the tumultuous early days, we've lived through it, we've had the ups and downs and the hormonal ups and downs and the girlfriend boyfriend breakup stuff and the school and the getting into this school, that school, not paying, yes paying, late hours, study, don't study, fail test, all heartbreaks. So now we're kind of riding in the middle, as if somehow that's where we needed to be. That's our achievement. And we don't expect the unexpected. We learn to, we're trained that things are expected. They're expectable. Let me put it that way. Hope that's a word. I don't think it is, but y'all know what I mean. You know what I mean. We expect the expectable. We say till death do us part, and we kind of expect that's going to happen. We don't expect it's going to happen in a week, but we kind of think that's going to happen, especially those of us who are more spiritually inclined or more religiously inclined. We kind of expect that we're going to go through those ups and downs for the rest till death do us part. And that doesn't always pan out. Or we do expect that when it's a week away from the birth of our very healthy baby, that we're going to have a baby. And then something goes wrong. Doesn't happen. So, or we take that birth control and you're 15 years old and somehow you're on that path and something doesn't work right. And then you end the pregnancy. And then now you're 30 and 35 and it's hurting you. Don't know what to do with it. So we got to look at, how do we get our freedom? How do we get our freedom in places that once were beautiful, thriving, gorgeous, amazing places, and then boom, all of a sudden, within a few years, they're filled with tyranny and fear. What do we do? So I think we need to talk about this internal wilderness, this internal need for freedom. And what does that mean? Because I can say all kinds of stuff, but when I'm facing it myself, it still hurts. Any surgeon can know exactly what to do with that mangled leg when some huge farm equipment falls on it. But if it's their leg that it falls on, they need help. They can't deal with it themselves. And it hurts. And they live with the consequences. So we're going to spend this program talking about the law of freedom. We're going to talk, I want to go back to Alfred Delp. He was the priest who's not a saint. And I can't, the only reason I've heard so far described of why he isn't a saint, and there's probably other more specific reasons, but this is what I've heard several times from several different sources, is that there was a question as to whether he might have been having too close a relationship with a secretary. And that has never been shown, never been proved. And he was a very young man when he was executed in 1945. So we really don't know, but he really left behind. He's a very little known person. And so I bring him up every chance I can get. Although I did see him and I was alerted to the fact there was even a person named Alfred Delp by reading a little blurb, a little quote from the Magnificat. So he's more known than I knew, but I still don't hear much about him. So we're going to look at what he has to say about the human need for freedom, the internal need for freedom. He just, he gets it. And he's writing from prison. So you are looking out from your prison cell, your internal things that bind you in. What's that about? We're going to talk about that as we get on the other side of the break. We're going to talk a little bit about passive aggression, passive aggressiveness, what that has to do with you and relationships. See you on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Well, welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can text, you can call, you can email me, dmlive at breadboxmedia.com, and you can definitely get the app. We are just so much, it's such a rich resource we got going here at Breadbox Media. And it helps me all the time. So it's great. When I listen to some of the other contributors, just I think, oh, well, I wonder what that's about. Boom. And then all of a sudden I'm hearing something, like one little thing that's so helpful, so great, even if I don't think it applies to me. So that's what this is all about. There are things I listen to that I think, well, that's not really in my sphere of reality or life or where I am in life. But I learn from everyone. I don't care if you're 19 or you're 90. Or 100. So today I'm going to do the unthinkable, and that is I'm going to read some things. It's not something you really are supposed to do on a broadcast on radio, but I'm going to do it anyway because it is very pertinent to what I want to talk about. And I will probably talk next week as well about this, but the rest of the day, because I do want to talk about your own personal relationships. I want to talk about your walk in life, your walk in Lent, your divorce, your skeletons in your closet, your happinesses, your joys, your inability. Do you beat yourself up because you don't have the time or what you feel you need to either stick with your Lenten promise or to enjoy your kids or whatever it is, or to do what you think is the right thing to do? Or you come from a very demanding background, very demanding family, or you may have some really sharp and harsh things to deal with, suicidal family members, children, husbands, wives. You may have, and if any of that's the case, then help, get help. I always put that as the caveat. We're talking about the ethereal here. We're talking about, we can talk about specifics, even down to people have asked me about medications before we've addressed over the air. But we really here, we are not substituting any kind of professional help for what you might need with boots on the ground where you're at. So if there's ever you're non-functional or someone you know is, or they're delusional and you get that gut feeling or they're suicidal in any way, then you got to get help. Because number one, err on the side of safety. You're not going to have another chance to work it out if you don't have a chance to work it out. So err on the side of life, err on the side of safety. Okay, so that said, Alfred Delp, he was the guy that was executed on February 2nd, 1945. He wrote a lot of things, and he would smuggle them out to his secretary when she would come to get his laundry. He was in prison. He was not in a concentration camp. He was being tried for treason. I think high treason. He was being tried falsely for plotting the death of Hitler, of being part of a movement that was plotting the death of Hitler. And they had already made a scourge on the Jesuits in Germany at that time. They'd already, and if you look a little bit at history, German history, and the only reason I know this is a woman who wrote a book called With Unbound Hands, I think it is. And it was the first book I ever saw before I ever saw this book I'm going to read to you from. She's the one who went to Germany and was inspired to write about him. And she got me a little interested in looking back a little bit before Hitler came to power, and maybe even 100 years before that, during different regimes and different parts of their history, and seeing how this kind of played out, scapegoatism and how, and then also what happened in parallel with the Catholic Church at that time as well. The church was being, everything needed to be gone, let me put it that way. And it started before Hitler, but the Jesuits especially, because they were the scholars, they were very Catholic, obviously, they were a big force. So they were targeted, and just the fact that he was Jesuit was his target place. But here he is around Christmas time, the Epiphany, in 1945. And he is knowing, actually it's afterward, it had to be January because he was executed in 1945. I'm sorry, it's the Epiphany, yeah. And so he was executed in February 2nd of 1945. So he was really very close to his end, and only he didn't know it was his end, but he knew that things were not right, not fair, and he kept hoping in God, and bad things kept happening. Surely people will see the light. Surely my case is real. Surely justice will be served. Surely there's no possible way they can draw these conclusions, until he realized that they didn't care. It's like the whole thing that we're looking at now in Lent all over again. Nobody cared that it wasn't right. Even Pontius Pilate said, "You're not guilty," but everybody just kind of wants you to be guilty. So, you know, I wouldn't do this if it was up to me. So I got to wash my hands of this, but I know you're not guilty. And that's what happened to Alfred Delp in 1945 in Germany during the Christmas season. But see, we're dealing with that very thing. So he is dealing with Christ's journey in his kangaroo court. And I'm looking at a book that you can buy on Amazon. Do you think they would, even if you would have told somebody back in 1945 that you're going to be able to get this little thing that you can carry around through an airport? And you're going to be able to just, you know, do a little keyboard magic and click on to Prime membership and Amazon and get a book about this guy's life. No, it was like nothing. It's like us going and living. You know, I think I'll take a vacation to the moon or Mars tomorrow, and then I'll come back after the weekend. We can't fathom that right now. They couldn't fathom it then. So here's what I want to do. I want to read to you a little bit, and then we're going to get into the rest of it afterward. So when Alfred Delp is writing this epiphany in 1945, keep in mind that he dies February 1945. I'm sorry. All right, so here we go, and we'll probably catch the rest of this after the break. It says, it may be possible to find an hour to think today. Now remember, this man is locked in a tower. So he's pretty overwhelmed in his head. How many times do you feel locked in a tower? How many times do you feel locked out? It may be possible to find an hour to think today. How many things there are to think about and what contrasts they present. The feast itself, he's talking about Christmas, and its rich symbolism. The emergence of God from the quiet corner of Bethlehem into the wider world, the guiding star, the men who have braved the wilderness, the joy of the encounter, the terror-stricken king, the indifferent clergy, the wonderful providence of God. And besides all this, all the other things the feast commemorates, the baptism in Jordan, the hearing of the Father's voice, the marriage feast of Cana, so very much to turn over in one's mind. Then the personal aspect, the many years I have spent in preparation and the day for renewing my holy vows. This year, in this time, when men and women are yearning for a star to guide them and not a glimmer of a star appears because their eyes are blind and cannot see, the message of the feast is more than usually urgent. We must pass it on and stir people's understanding. But to come back to my own personal predicament, in 2 more days, my case will come up for trial. Just 2 days in which I can rely only upon God, for there is no other help I can turn to. How I have prayed for a Christmas star, for light on this problem. But God has left it unanswered. He is asking me to make, quote, the step to freedom, unquote, the decisive stride, which will carry me from myself to lose myself completely in him. Here also is a wilderness to be crossed, and a terrified ruler only too eager to use the sword. How can I best sum this up, make a mental picture which will unravel my perplexity? Situated as I am, I should so love to be able to give my friends and myself one word whose genuineness would be unquestionable because it has been won from God himself. But up to now, I have not found that word. Will that last hour eventually produce it for me? I realize now as never before that a life is wasted if it cannot be summed up in one word, one direction, one ruling passion. Only a human being who has this secret can rise to his full stature. Everything else is mass-produced, subject to any condition others choose to impose. And the hallmarked individuals are rarely met with nowadays. That is, why life lacks purpose and makes so little sense. The genuine dialogue no longer exists because there are no genuine partners to engage in it. People are frightened. They are scared to stride out firmly and honestly to the boundaries of their potential powers because they are afraid of what they will find at the borderline. The person who aims at fulfillment only within the framework of his own limitations must always be afraid of the unknown. The extension of the limitless, the eternal that is beyond our comprehension and yet vaguely draws us from being within our own capacity for experience, is the real source of our uneasiness. It is precisely here that human judgment and assessment of values comes in. And we're going to find out what he says, because he's going to tell us how to overcome this. Be overcomers. We'll get to that on the other side of the break.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Breadbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You are listening to Dr. Michelle Live, 573-4-BREAD-4. You can email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. I'm reading to you for a reason, a very specific reason. Alfred Delp found a place inside of himself that was deeper than anything that I've certainly experienced. He is a teacher. At the moment he was writing this, he didn't know. He still had hope on the earthly level that justice would be served. Everything I was able to read when I was reading about him several years ago indicated that his lawyer was very confident. He was confident because it was such a slam dunk case. Still, we know the other side of the story. He was executed very shortly after he was writing this. So that the discoveries that come up, and I've seen this happen when people pass, when they die, whether, again, they're 9 or 95. And I'm serious about that. I've seen it. I've seen wisdom. My own brother wrote in his journal, am I gaining the wisdom of an old, am I going to die? Let me back up. He wrote, am I going to die soon? I seem to be gaining the wisdom of an old man. And he was dead in a couple months. So, and it was unexpected. So that happens sometimes, not to everybody, but that does happen. So here he doesn't know what's going to happen in 2 days. He's still holding out hope. But I want to get into this internal freedom. That's what we're supposed to be looking at in Lent because it culminates in the resurrection. Where was Jesus's fully man? Where was his freedom? Where was his freedom? It's the same walk as Alfred Delp. I'm going along life. I'm fulfilling my purpose. Alfred Delp was supposed to be renewing vows. In fact, I think he was supposed to actually be, I don't think he was, I can't remember what that next step was, but he actually had a moment in prison where he somehow finagled a situation where he was able to take them. So he was fulfilling his purpose as a young man, much like Jesus. He was on his road. Jesus was doing miracles. People loved him. Alfred Delp was teaching. He was a Jesuit. He was teaching young people. He was in classrooms. He was, he did much like Pope John Paul II, he was into drama. And he wrote plays. And he was a good-looking guy. And he was an athletic guy, just like John Paul II. And there's no reason in the world for him when he started on this journey to think that in a very short period of time in his life, almost about like around the same age as Jesus, that he would actually follow almost the same fate. Complete innocence of the charges. Pretty sure that, you know, the God part of Jesus knew this, but the human part, it's like, well, this should not be happening. And having the same thing, the blind eye, the mass hysteria, all this that went on. So, all right, let's do this. So I'm going to finish this because we're going to bring it back to present day. We're going to bring it back to you, your ways that you deal with people, why you deal with them that way. I want to look a little bit about passive aggressiveness, because that's a little misunderstood term, and we all have a little bit of it in us, but man, sometimes it can get out of hand, and it's getting out of hand on a global sense right now, my opinion. All right, so let me finish up here. So as he's writing this on the Epiphany, during the Epiphany of 1945, he knew that just in a couple days, he was going to have his fate decided upon him. And I want to remind you a couple things that he said that I read before the break. He said, the genuine dialogue no longer exists because there are no genuine partners to engage in it. He says, people are frightened. They are scared to stride out firmly and honestly to the boundaries of their potential powers because they are afraid of what they will find at the borderline. That is the perfect place for someone who wants to control you, for you to be. You are afraid to stride out firmly and honestly, that might mean self-honesty, to the boundaries of your potential powers because you are afraid of what you will find at the borderline. So he goes on to say, the person who aims at fulfillment only within the framework of his own limitations must always be afraid of the unknown. Basically, that is the human present-day way of saying of yourself, you can do nothing. But listen to that again. I'm going to put it in the you term. You who aim at fulfillment only within the framework of your own limitations must always be afraid of the unknown. The existence of the limitless, the eternal, that is beyond your comprehension, and yet vaguely draws you as a being within your capacity for experience is the real source of your uneasiness. It is precisely there that human judgment and assessment of values comes in. For you who desire to develop your highest potentials, today's feasts give the laws and conditions which should regulate your lives. He's talking about Epiphany. I'm talking about Lent. It shows you the way by which you can achieve and prove real individuality. All right, so now I'm going to get into his law of freedom. Humans need freedom. As slaves, fettered and confined, they are bound to deteriorate. We have spent a great deal of thought and time on external freedom. We have made serious efforts to secure our own personal liberty, and yet we have lost it again and again. The worst thing is that eventually humans come to accept that state of bondage. It becomes habitual, and we hardly notice it. The most abject slaves can be made to believe that the condition in which they are held is actually freedom. I'm reading that one again, for me and for you. The most abject slaves can be made to believe that the condition in which they are held is actually freedom. During these long weeks of confinement, I have learned by personal experience that a person is truly lost, is the victim of circumstances and oppression only when he is incapable of a greater inner sense of depth and freedom. Anyone whose natural element is not an atmosphere of freedom, unsalable and unshakable, whatever force may be put on it, is already lost. But such a person is not really a human being anymore. He is merely an object, a number, a voting paper. And the inner freedom can only be attained if we have discovered the means of widening our own horizons. I'm reading that again because we're coming into our voting season, aren't we? I'm reading this again. Anyone whose natural element is not an atmosphere of freedom, unassailable and unshakable, whatever force may be put upon it, is already lost. But such a person is not really a human being anymore. He is merely an object, a number, a voting paper. And the inner freedom can only be attained if we have discovered the means of widening our own horizons. We must progress and grow. We must mount above our own limitations. It can be done. The driving force is the inner urge to conquer, whose very existence shows that human nature is fundamentally designed for this expansion A rebel, after all, can be trained to be a decent citizen, but an idler and a dreamer is a hopeless proposition. Human freedom is born in the moment of our contact with God. It is really unimportant whether God forces us, now listen to this before the break, it is really unimportant whether God forces you out of your limits by the sheer distress of much suffering, coaxes you with visions of beauty and truth, or pricks you into action by the endless hunger and thirst for righteousness that possesses your soul. What really matters is the fact that you are called, and you must be sufficiently awake to hear the call. The law of freedom is an appropriate theme for today. When those worshipers knelt in homage on the floor of the humble stable, with everything else put behind them, their homes, the wilderness, the guiding star, the agony of the silent star, the palace of the king, and the grandeur of the city, when all these had lost their value and their impressiveness, and the worshipers' whole being was concentrated in the single act of adoration. The symbolic gesture of laying gifts before the manger signified the achievement of liberty. Then they were free. And I'm venturing to say that we can look at that as not just the Christmas scene, but let's look at that as the Lenten scene as well. Because everything was put behind those people on Calvary. Everything was put behind that, those women, those hoped in Christ, Mary, all that was put behind. There was just one single act to be very present at that very moment. So we're going to finish this up on the other side of the break. I'm going to get into actual passive aggressiveness, relationships, and how you're going to finish up your Lent on the other side of the break. This is Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Redbox Media, share the app and change the world.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Michelle. You're listening to Dr. Michelle Live. You are with me on this journey. We are here together. 573-4BREAD-4. 573-4BREAD-4. Text, call, DM live at breadboxmedia.com is my email address. DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can get the app, listen to us, Breadbox Media, and all the awesome contributors any old time you want. All right, so we're looking at personal freedom, and the only way we can, this is one of the beauties of aligning ourselves with different walks with Jesus, if you're Christian, even if you're not even lukewarm, because we all want our heroes. We all want someone to be true, right, and just. We want them to guide us with truth, honesty, and selflessness. We need that. Jesus was God. Jesus became brilliant light on Mount Tabor. He kind of bled through it, just light, radiation through his own skin. This is a man who was also God, and in a mystery we don't understand. And we have mysteries happening around us all the time. We just pretend they aren't. So let's not go there. Let's just take what we can learn right now and go where we can with this Lenten journey because it has purpose and meaning. And it is not that different than the nativity and the birth journey and the people who dealt with that. So as Alfred Delp is writing this during the Epiphany, and in a few days, he's going to be executed in a kangaroo court, by a kangaroo court, after he's condemned of treason, which he did not commit. And everyone washed their hands because everyone already knew that he wasn't, that he needed to be an example. So, and this was in Germany, 1945. But what he had to give, he said, you know, will the last hour eventually produce it for me? I realize now as never before that a life is wasted if it cannot be summed up in one word. He wanted that one word from God. He wanted to rely, he wanted that word to be, no, you're innocent and we will prove. But God had something different in store for him. And it's, you know, it breaks my heart for him and for his family and his mother and the people who loved him. But here we are today. I'm reading to you because the word God gave him, it was eternal. And I can read it now. And that is huge. That's bigger than any word. He would have just been another priest that would have lived out his life in Germany if everything would have gone according to what he had hoped for. And that would have been probably very great for him and his mother and his family and his loved ones and his friends. That's what we want. But yet God had something different in mind. So with all your sufferings, all the things you've done, all the times people have led you to believe one thing and something else occurred, all the pain that you suffer through personal betrayals, even when you betray your own self, that all can be used and it all is, and we see examples of it over and over. So we are at our last segment. I'm going to try to get through this. Humans need freedom. As slaves fettered and confined, they are bound to deteriorate. We have spent a great deal of thought and time on external freedom. We have made serious efforts to secure our personal liberty, and yet we have lost it again and again. The worst thing is that eventually humans come to accept the state of bondage. It becomes habitual and they hardly notice it. Does that ring a bell? Does to me. The most abject slaves can be made to believe that the condition in which they are held is actually freedom. During these long weeks of confinement, I have learned by personal experience that a person is truly lost, is a victim of circumstances and oppression, only when he is incapable of a greater inner sense of depth. Now, we read that before the break. Then he goes on to say, the inner freedom can only be attained if we have discovered the means of widening our own horizons. We must progress and grow and mount above our own limitations. That means what we've already set and gained to have accepted so far. It can be done. The inner driving force is the inner urge to conquer, whose very existence shows that human nature is fundamentally designed for the expansion to conquer. A rebel, after all, can be trained to be a decent citizen, but an idler and a dreamer is a hopeless proposition. Human freedom is born in the moment of our contact with God. It is really unimportant whether God forces us out of our limits by the sheer distress of much suffering, coaxes us with visions of beauty and truth, or pricks us into action by endlessly hungering and thirsting for righteousness. What really matters is the fact that we are called and we must be sufficiently awake to hear that call. All right, so this weekend, I want you to think about that. You are called and you must be sufficiently awake to hear the call. Regardless of how that call came, did it come through a bunch of suffering and a bunch of betrayals and a bunch of hard knocks? Did it come from a terrible family? Did it come from a fight with alcohol and drugs and porn? Did it come from being married to someone with that? Did it come from having to deal with the hardest parts in life and the injustices, perhaps through disability or infirmity or accident? Or maybe you are the one who came through a life of truth and beauty, and it's up to you to spread the truth behind it to the rest of the world and to yourself. He says, the law of freedom is an appropriate theme for today. And then he went on to talk about when those worshipers knelt in homage on the floor of the humble stable, that everything else was put behind them And when everything was put behind them and that one symbol of adoration, remember I said, wake up and do just say, I praise your name. That is inner freedom. I praise your name. I am not going to let a shady husband, a shady business partner, a shady government, a shady drug, a shady drug pusher, a shady priest, a shady anything. I'm not going to let them dictate to me and take my freedom, take me so that I can't praise your name anymore. I'm not going to allow that to happen. And we can see that because you say, well, but I got so betrayed. I got so hurt. You don't know what it's like. And no one knows what it is like to walk in your shoes. Only you know what it's like to walk in your shoes. But only you have the ability. You cannot control how you feel. You cannot control how you are. You cannot control the damage or that was done or not done. You can't control the fact that you can see things clearly. Maybe you're the beauty and truth person, but you can't impart it to someone who's so broken. You don't, and that's your burden right there. But what you can control, how you gain the inner freedom according to Alfred Delp, is that everything else falls away and you're left with that praise. I'm giving you, you are God. That's all you got to do when he's talking about those people at the floor of the manger and we're talking about now in our Lenten journey. So it says, our age, like those before us, have tried many other ways, but the life urge is very strong in any person of genuine feeling, and it keeps forcing us back to our own potentialities. We found it very hard to let go of beautiful things. Do you hear what he says? We find it hard to let go of the beautiful things. Maybe it was love. Maybe it was a child. But in the end, we have to. Doesn't mean you forget while you're on earth, by the way. We came to the stable by a road, which was a laborious, terrifying, and blood-soaked, and this miserable dwelling was at the end of it. Our hands are empty, more than empty. They are torn and bleeding because things literally had to be wrenched from their grasp. But in spite of everything, we can hear and recognize the call. If we can discover the inner meaning of the grim experience through which we are passing, and if in the midst of this frightfulness we can learn to pray, then this hell will bring forth a new human being, and a blessed hour will strike for the troubled earth in the middle of the night, as it has so often before. The fate of humankind, my own fate, the verdict awaiting me, the significance of the feast can all be summed up in the sentence, surrender thyself to God and thou shalt find thyself again. Others have you in their power now. They torture and frighten you, hound you from pillar to post. But the inner law of freedom sings that no death can kill us. Life is eternal. Pray and praise. The fundamental words of life, the steep roads to God, the doors that lead to fulfillment, the ways that lead to a person to his true self. Please ponder that. Put that in your heart for the weekend. The fate, your own fate, and the verdicts of your life all can be summed up in one sentence, which he quotes, surrender thyself to God and thou shalt find thyself again. Others have you in their power right now. They torture you. They frighten you. They make you freak out. They make you go do things you don't want to do, like little sheep that are scared. But what he says is you can come back from that through prayer and praise. That's all you got to do. So start this weekend again. Wake up and say, I praise your name. I praise your name and everything that has happened to me thus far in my life. I praise you. I praise you. And I'm telling you, at least Alfred Delp tells us, and I believe him, this is going to be a big key for you. Ponder it in your heart this weekend. We'll see you on Monday. This is Dr. Michelle.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are right now. Redbox Media, share the app and change the world.